having experience as a firefighter, I know firsthand that sleep can be a problem, especially if you're firehouse. They have a lot of calls, so high call volume. Most of the time, you're getting up at least a couple times a night. Some nights you're going from like call to call to call, just like you would during the day, but now it's at night, so you're not sleeping.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Seattle Firefighters. Today is episode 5, part 1 of 2 on sleep hygiene. We have so much to share on the subject that we basically had to break this into 2 parts. Dr. Beth Murphy and Dr. Marcy Hamrick are going to talk about getting better sleep. In part 2, episode 6, we'll be talking more about food, drink, and nutritional strategies to get better sleep, so there's more to come. But for now, many of us don't even think of sleep as a hygienic component. But the emphasis on creating a routine here around healthier sleep habits is better for all of us in the long run, and in some cases for our partners too. Both these doctors are well-versed in treating firefighter patients, and they've got some great advice to share. So let's get to it. I'm your host, Jen Pennington, and this is Listen Up, L27.
I think the most important thing around sleep that I talk to firefighters about is having a bedtime routine.
Yes.
Particularly firefighters who have kids, I compare sort of the bedtime routine that they take their kids through, which is turning down the lights, reading a book, like doing kind of calming and relaxing activities before bed, which helps them sort of take it down a notch from their high energy level. Similarly, we as grown-ups are busy doing and getting things done and being productive, and we know that it takes some transition time to go from being busy and productive to being relaxed enough to support good and healthy and restorative sleep. So I talk to people about what do you do in that 30 to 60 minutes before you go to bed and how important that is for the amount and quality of sleep. We know that dark, quiet, cool environments, free of technology, I think that's the big one. I think we all tend to want to look at our phones or play games or read the news. I feel like the news is the opposite of relaxation. So doing things that promote calmness, whether that be using an app for relaxation, drinking sleepy time tea, turning music on, stretching, taking deep breaths. There's lots of studies that show even a warm bath or shower, like heating your body up, and then when it cools down, it stimulates our relaxation response.
Also, the avoidance of light at night, so not just the technology, but dimming the light.
And including television, I think.
Yes.
Watching TV as a wind down, like we put the kids to bed, and then we go and watch Netflix mm-hmm. with my partner, and it's good mm-hmm. quality time with my partner, which is great. I don't want to yeah. discourage it, but that exposure to television is actually stimulating to our nervous system. So having some time after you're done watching television to really promote that relaxation mm-hmm. with, you know, really dimming the lights, having minimal lights, and doing things that help you feel tired and relaxed. Mm-hmm. So the components of what we call sleep hygiene include having a dark, quiet, cool room, trying to go to bed and wake up at the same time each day, which I know for firefighters is impossible, but you do the best you can. Having light exposure in the morning really helps to set our circadian rhythm, so both the dark at night and the light in the morning. Trying not to take naps is in that list. I think sometimes people can nap without having trouble going to sleep the next night, but that is part of sleep hygiene. Not using stimulants as best as possible later in the day, including nicotine, caffeine, including energy drinks, those types of things, cutting it off before noon.
Having experience as a firefighter, I know firsthand that sleep can be a problem, especially if you're firehouse. They have a lot of calls, so high call volume. Most of the time, you're getting up at least a couple times a night. Some nights you're going from like call to call to call, just like you would during the day, but now it's at night, so you're not sleeping. Probably the most important thing is to actually have a really good sleep schedule. So have good sleep hygiene so that when you are at home, you are getting the best quality sleep that you can get, and you're getting the most consistent sleep that you can get, because you can't ever count on getting sleep when you're at the station. Some other things that are really important that can be helpful is to make sure that you get light exposure in the morning, like daylight. And I mean, daylight is the best, but being exposed to bright light in the morning is better than nothing. But you want that light in the morning, and it's better if it's daylight, even if it's gray and overcast outside. So it doesn't have to be sunlight, it just has to be daylight. And spend time out there. So if it's overcast, you're gonna be spending more time out there, but in the morning. But having that consistent schedule, exercise also is important too. So I would say the most important things is like to get light exposure, to avoid naps if you can. It's okay to drink caffeine, just drink it early in the day. If you drink it later in the day, that's going to interfere in your sleep. Exercise, and then when you do go to sleep, keep it cool. So temperature is really important also. And I'm trying to think, I'm sure I forgot something, but did you have anything to add?
Yes, we know that alcohol initially is a depressant. So people often use alcohol to help them get to sleep. But what we also know is that it is metabolized into a stimulant. So it often will wake people up, or at least disturb the architecture of their sleep, so they're not getting recovery sleep in the deep and REM stages of sleep. We know that alcohol suppresses that, as does caffeine. Interestingly, caffeine, 12 hours later, we have half the amount of caffeine in our bodies as we had right after we drank that cup of coffee. So it's very slowly metabolized. There's some genetic differences between different people, but in general, even if it's 12 hours later, we still have caffeine on board. Just hopefully not so much that it's interfering. And then in terms of alcohol, for each drink that we have, about 2 hours later, it's metabolized into a stimulant. So for instance, if we had two beers at bedtime, then 4 hours later, we would expect to either wake up or for our sleep to be disturbed.
It's common for firefighters to use alcohol to help them wind down so that they can go to sleep. And sometimes, unfortunately, they're drinking to the point of passing out. And it's not good sleep. It's disrupted sleep. And you're basically sedated. And it's also true of marijuana also. That can impact your sleep in that way as well. So those things for a sleep aid, not a good thing at all. If somebody's having sleep issues, there are a number of things that can be causing it. And you probably talked about like medical aspects that can influence medications, hormone fluctuations. So there's a lot of things that impact it. But also you can actually develop a fear of your bed or a fear of sleep. So a lot of times people will go to bed and they can't sleep and they stay in bed. And as that goes on, then people start to become anxious about bedtime. And so it's important that if you don't fall asleep right away, or if you fall asleep and you wake up and you don't go back to sleep right away, that you get up. And so you as an individual really need to set a time. Like, how long are you willing to lay in bed not sleeping? I know for me personally, if I'm not asleep in 15, maybe 20 minutes, I get up and I go read, or I do something quiet. So kind of that stuff that you choose to do to wind down, that would be the things that you would do if you can't sleep. And then you can, you know, when you get sleepy, you go back to bed. So that's important. I've seen a lot of people that have developed such anxiety about bedtime that just thinking about going to bed, they're already setting themselves up like, I know I'm not gonna go to sleep. And that has nothing to do with having nightmares. I mean, so like having nightmares, which is common with PTSD or either visual nightmares or re-experiencing of the physiological fight flight, that can disrupt sleep as well. But they're, you know, notwithstanding just that that fear of I'm not going to get to sleep, or the, and being desperate to get sleep. So that can be an issue. So one thing is go to your doctor to rule out anything medical. The other is to keep a log, do a sleep log, you know, write down when you go to bed, and then hopefully you sleep all night, and then you'll get up and you go, oh, I fell asleep in about 15 minutes, had dreams, didn't have dreams, whatever it was. But it's really important if you're having trouble sleeping or staying asleep. And then you can also log like what you did previous. So it, and it's a way of looking at like, what's my sleep routine? What's the quality of my sleep? What am I doing? How can I change things? And then there's an app, CBTI. Did you mention that?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. CBTI is Cognitive Behavioral Therapy Insomnia. And it's a free app, and it was created by the VA, and it basically will walk you through all this. It talks about good sleep hygiene. It talks about things that you need to do for good sleep. It gives you a space to record, like, you know, if you're like logging, what do I have to log? They walk you through it. Pretty much everything that you would need to do to evaluate your sleep yourself. Because those things are things that you're going to want to tell to a medical professional or to a psychologist. So once you've ruled out medical, you would go to a psychologist to work on behavioral.
I will say that CBTI can be done via one-on-one counseling with a therapist, but the VA did develop this app to make it more accessible. And it is the most evidence-based, researched way of helping people with insomnia. It's more effective than any medication that we have available. So I think sometimes people feel like they'd prefer, you know, it's easier to take a medication. And I try to encourage people to consider doing this, using this app instead, because it's actually more effective.
There's so much overlap between all this. Sleep is like so crucial. I mean, for mental health, for physical health, for everything. And it's something that firefighters can do something about. And it, I mean, I think so. It makes it like the low hanging fruit, so
right.
to speak.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there are a lot of health consequences of sleep deprivation, both in the short term. I think just a single night of less than optimal sleep will lead people to certainly feel more cranky, so it affects mood, feel tired. As much as people may not realize it, their reaction time is slowed, their memory isn't as good, their ability to concentrate isn't as good. It often causes me concern about firefighters who have long commutes. After they've worked 48-hour shifts, they then drive, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours to get home. And just knowing physiologically that those changes have occurred as a result of the lack of sleep causes me concern. And we know that accidents are more likely to happen when people have not had a good night's sleep. And then chronically, just being sleep deprived in general, which right now science is sort of saying less than 7 to 9 hours per night leads to cumulative sleep deprivation. And that has a lot of medical consequences, including because of the increased stress hormones, we have more inflammation, which suppresses our immune system, which then makes us more vulnerable to getting sick, having infections, and in the long term, when our immune system's weak, we're at higher risk of getting cancers of all kinds. That same inflammation contributes to inflammation of our blood vessels, which causes plaque to accumulate and makes us at higher risk of having heart attacks and strokes. We also know that particularly deep restorative sleep helps to cleanse our brains, our central nervous system, of certain proteins that when they accumulate contribute to or even cause Alzheimer's disease. So we know now that when people have cumulative sleep deprivation chronically, they are at significantly higher risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. So for all of those reasons, I worry about the short and the long-term health of firefighters.
Thanks for listening. Listen Up L27 is brought to you by Seattle Firefighters Healthcare Trust and Local 27. Thanks to our recording engineer, Ted Grudowski. I'm your host, Jen Pennington, and until next time, stay safe and stay healthy.